Good morning on today's programme. An Italian court has rejected an appeal from a mother and father to be reunited with their young children for Christmas in a court case that has shocked the country. And after more than 14 years of investigations, The Hague has taken a step closer to bringing Libyan war criminals and human rights abusers to justice. First though, we go to the United States, where the city of Boston is experiencing a crackdown on the famously liberal sanctuary city by the US Immigration and Customs Enforcement, known as ICE. Teachers have reported that thousands of immigrant children have left public schools in fear, while workers are being detained, often wrongly, by masked men carrying out widespread raids. Alice Hutton has this report.
Annie Lucia Lopez Belosa will not be home for Christmas. In November, the 19-year-old freshman undergraduate with long brown hair was on a scholarship studying business at Babson College on the outskirts of Boston, a major she hoped would help her father open his own tailor shop one day. Then, she decided to take a surprise trip home to Austin in Texas to spend Thanksgiving with her parents and two sisters, who are 2 and 5. Just before she boarded her flight at Logan Airport on November the 20th, she was arrested by federal U.S. immigration agents known as ICE, who deported her to Honduras for allegedly having been denied asylum when she arrived in the U.S. age 7. Her lawyer, Todd Pomelo, issued a statement which said that the family was here legally and that ICE had defied a judge's order not to deport her until the confusion was cleared up. He said she had chains around her ankles, handcuffs on her wrists, put on the plane and deported to a country she hadn't been to in 12 years. It's beyond the pale. The East Coast city of Boston is a little short on holiday cheer this year. Masked men in dark cars roam the streets carrying out raids. Teachers have reported empty desks as thousands of immigrant children leave public schools out of fear of being targeted as they learn. It's part of a crackdown on the famously liberal sanctuary city by the US Immigration and Customs Enforcement, known as ICE, that they dubbed Patriot 2.0. ICE declared in a statement on December the 4th that they had arrested more than 1,400 illegal aliens, allegedly including murderers, rapists, drug traffickers, child sex predators, and members of violent transnational gangs. But last month, they arrested 9 car wash workers in the student neighborhood of Alston as they scrubbed and buffed vehicles after a British-born Republican college student denounced them as illegal immigrants to ICE. Most have since been released, after their papers were found to be correct and their criminal backgrounds non-existent. One worker, a 46-year-old woman called Felicita, said that masked agents dragged employees out in the middle of vacuuming. They were missing for 5 days, with no legal representation, as agents tried to force them to sign their own deportation papers. After her release, Felicita said, "I prayed to God to give me strength because I didn't know what to do." Boston's Congresswoman, Ayanna Pressley, called it a terror campaign. However, the famously democratic city is fighting back. The Catholic Church of St. Susanna in the suburb of Dedham has replaced its traditional nativity scene with an empty cradle, now holding a sign in capital letters warning ICE was here, suggesting that ICE arrested the Holy Family. Underneath is the number of Luce, a grassroots hotline for ICE sightings in Massachusetts. They joined another church in Illinois, which zip-tied baby Jesus. It has sparked a fight with the Archdiocese, who called it sacrilegious and demanded the priest remove it. Father Steve Yosoma has refused and said the display's purpose is to evoke emotion and dialogue in response to the fear many parishioners face. Other activists are taking a different approach. This week was the 252nd anniversary of the Boston Tea Party, where colonists threw tea in Boston Harbor to protest unfair taxes. On Tuesday, demonstrators gathered to protest the Trump administration's immigration policies by dumping ICE in the sea instead. Protesters marched in freezing cold weather from the Irish Famine Memorial Plaza to the Waterfront Plaza and could be heard chanting, "No ICE, no kings, no tariffs, no ICE." Some of them wore colonial garb and carried signs that said 1773 to 2025. Then it was tea, now it is ICE. Organisers Mass 50501 and Boston Indivisible called it the destruction of our democratic norms. Katie Dirks, a member of Boston Indivisible, said, "This crisis we're having has a lot of similarities to the crisis that was happening over 250 years ago. Families are afraid to go out of their homes. We are outraged right now and we're standing up for our neighbours." While she waits on her legal team to get her back to her family in Texas, Annie is spending Christmas with her grandparents in San Pedro Sula in Honduras. She told CNN that ICE had crushed her hope for the future. She said, "I have worked so hard to be able to be at Babson my first semester. That was my dream." This is Alice Hutton for World Report in Boston.
In Italy, a court has rejected an appeal from a British father and his Australian wife to be reunited with their young children for Christmas. In a case that has shocked the country, the two girls and their brother were forcibly removed from their parents last month in the region of Abruzzo, east of Rome, and are being held in a government shelter. Josephine McKenna reports.
It sounds like the dream of every foreigner who falls hopelessly in love with Italy. Buying a cottage in the countryside and replacing the stress of city life with a bucolic retreat that offers a much simpler lifestyle. Nathan Trevelyan, a 51-year-old chef from Bristol, and his Australian wife, Catherine Birmingham, a former equestrian, bought a rundown cottage for €20,000 outside the hilltop village of Palmoli in 2021. They wanted to live off the land and raise their three children, 8-year-old Utopia Rose and 6-year-old twins, Galorian and Bluebell, with their horse, donkey, dogs and other animals. The children were being schooled at home. The family grew their own vegetables, relied on solar power and drew their water from a well. But just over a year ago, Italian authorities became concerned about the family's off-the-grid lifestyle. After the entire family was rushed to hospital when they ate wild mushrooms. While there was no evidence of family violence, social services began raising doubts about the children's well-being, their education, and their isolation from other children. In November, a judge upheld prosecutors' claims that the children were suffering serious harm owing to their parents' back-to-nature approach. The judge also said it was unacceptable the children had to use an outdoor lavatory. The family immediately lodged an appeal, but that didn't stop Carabinieri police from removing the children and taking them, accompanied by their mother, to a government shelter 30 kilometres away from their home in the coastal town of Vasto. In the latest development, the children's court on Friday rejected the parents' appeal to release the children. The case has shocked a country which has a particular reverence for the role of the family. It took a foreign family to provoke a national debate about the delicate balance between parental rights and the role of the state. Emotions are running high. Commentators have dubbed the treatment of the family in the woods a scandal. TV talk shows and social media have seen an outpouring of support, and an online petition has attracted nearly 160,000 signatures from many who see it as an attack on civil liberties. Before the children were removed, Nathan and Catherine told me they were being unfairly targeted for their unconventional choices and unwillingness to enrol their children in Italian schools. At the time, one of two court-appointed guardians said that the children seemed to be well-treated. And when I recently visited the family property, residents approached me spontaneously to express their outrage about the court's action. "These children belong with their parents," one man told me as he pulled up on the side of the road. In the nearby village of Palmoli, some quietly conceded the family could have handled the standoff differently. But that hasn't stopped a string of government ministers from using the case to attack the judiciary. Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni said she was alarmed, while Deputy Prime Minister Matteo Salvini, head of the far-right League Party, slammed Friday's court decision as shameful, saying children were not the property of the state. 2 weeks ago, the Justice Minister Carlo Nordio demanded a full report from the courts and threatened disciplinary action against the judges involved. After replacing their initial legal team, the Trevelyans have softened and stressed their willingness to cooperate with the authorities. The parents have accepted the temporary use of a B&B property just a few kilometres from their home, while they install internal plumbing at their farmhouse. And a local tutor is reportedly ready to assist with the children's education. But for this family of five, the future remains uncertain, and their Christmas certainly looks bleak. This is Josephine McKenna for World Report in Rome.
To Libya now, and after more than 14 years of investigations into crimes against humanity and war crimes, the International Criminal Court in The Hague has taken custody of one suspect on their list of 10 wanted for arrest. The arrest in Germany of Khaled Mohammed Ali Al-Hishri and his successful transfer into the ICC's custody has been hailed as a precedent. It has set a standard of cooperation between international law enforcements to bring Libyan war criminals and human rights abusers to justice. Elysia Volkman reports.
The transfer of custody of Khaled Mohammed Ali Al-Hishri, a senior officer in the Libyan militia known as Al-Radar, that controls the notorious Matiga prison in Tripoli, made history, being the first on the list of 10 suspects to be arrested for crimes against humanity, including war crimes committed in Libya since 2011. His first court appearance took place on the 3rd of December, before the pretrial chamber 1 in the presence of the International Criminal Court's Office of the Prosecutor and his defence counsel, Mr. Yasser Mohammed Ahmed Hassan. Al-Hishri's journey to the dock has been a long one. He was arrested in Germany on the 16th of July earlier this year, just 6 days after the International Criminal Court had issued a warrant for his arrest under seal. Al-Hishri served in the Tripoli-based militia called the Special Deterrence Force, better known as Al-Radar, who controlled the area of Tripoli around Matiga Airport and Matiga Prison. Matiga Prison gained notoriety for its appalling conditions and the degradation of human dignity, health and serious abuse of its inmates, many held without legal precedent at all. Between 2015 and 2020, Al-Hishri was a high-ranking officer serving in that prison. It's alleged that he committed many acts of cruelty, including torture, sexual violence, rape, and it's alleged that he murdered several prisoners. The successful transfer of custody of Al-Hishri, also known by his nom de guerre Al-Bouti, is being promoted as a benchmark of cooperation under the Rome Statute, a treaty signed by 60 states that underpins the ICC's remit to prosecute the very worst of crimes, including war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide. Al-Hishri's case comes after the bungled attempt to arrest a much higher-profile militia leader, General Osama al-Masri Najim. Najim was arrested in January while visiting Turin for a football match. His defence attorney claimed the ICC warrant was insufficient and didn't comply with certain articles of Italian law. Libyans' reaction to Najim's arrest was vitriolic and seen as yet another act of foreign interference in Libya's affairs. Najim was released by an Italian court of appeal and deported back to Libya, where he was welcomed with much applause. The ICC accused the Italian Ministry of Justice of not complying with the Rome Statute, to which Italy is a signatory, and to non-cooperation with ICC judicial processes. Human rights organisations were appalled and saw Najim's release as a huge setback for those seeking justice for crimes and atrocities suffered in Libya. The founder of NGO Refugees in Libya, David Yambio, told me that he had personally suffered grave abuses and torture at the hands of al-Masri. Yambio would later address the European Parliament after al-Hishri's arrest to underscore the importance of pursuing justice against such criminals. However, Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni defended Najim's release and deportation as being in the interests of Italian state security. Successive Italian governments have a long and complex history with Libyan militia leaders. In their endeavour to prevent migrants landing on their shores, Italy has been accused of financing Libyan militias, alongside official EU migration management funding to Libya's government and so-called Coast Guard, which itself is run by coastal militias. But Al-Hishri, it seems, is not such a well-known nor as admired character as General Najim. According to a local Libyan reporter, said the reaction to his arraignment had been muted in contrast to the uproar over the arrest of Najim. The ICC investigation began in March 2011. Investigators say that by and large, the Libyan authorities have been relatively cooperative with investigators working on the ground. Evidence of the brutal detention system, war crimes and other human rights abuses in Libya continues to emerge and victims continue to come forward. However, Libya has not offered up any of the remaining 9 suspects for arrest. There are still many questions to be answered as to why al-Hishri's arrest stuck, and others such as General Najim and Saif Gaddafi, son of the former dictator Colonel Gaddafi, are still at liberty in Libya and seem untouchable. The message from the ICC and the German government is that a benchmark has been set and it is now expected of all European nations to cooperate in bringing the remaining 9 suspects to justice. For al-Hishri, his date with destiny is May 19, 2026, when the hearing for the full confirmation of charges will be heard at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. For World Report, I'm Alicia Falkman in Tunis, Tunisia.
That's it from World Report for today. The programme was edited by Margaret Curley. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/worldreport or find us on all podcast platforms. We're back again at the same time next week. Until then, from myself, Ethna Dodd, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.